Hello, welcome to a podcast for the Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology. I'm Gavin Cleaver, and it's January 8th, 2019. We have a new paper out today looking at changes in albuminuria and the subsequent risk of end-stage kidney disease. I'm delighted to be joined on the line today by one of the authors, Hiddo Lambers-Hirschbink, to discuss the findings. Hiddo, these papers emerged from a workshop in March 2018, which was sponsored by the US National Kidney Foundation, the FDA, and the European Medicines Agency. Tell us a little bit about the background around that meeting and what its purpose was.
Yes, I can do that. There's a general agreement that biomarkers and surrogate endpoints will be needed to approve new drugs to slow the progression of chronic kidney disease. The two most widely studied biomarkers in nephrology are GFR and albuminuria. But there's still controversy about their validity as surrogate endpoint for clinical trials, especially in the early stages of chronic kidney disease. A previous workshop supported by the National Kidney Foundation and the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. proposed a 30% or 40% eGFR decline as surrogate endpoint for clinical trials. Although these endpoints are used nowadays, their application is limited in patients with preserved kidney function. Therefore, the National Kidney Foundation sponsored another workshop in March 2018 entitled Change in Albuminuria and GFR as Endpoints for Clinical Trials in Early Stages of Chronic Kidney Disease. The workshop was organized in collaboration again with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and now also the European Medicine Agency. The goal of the workshop was to evaluate surrogate endpoints for trials of kidney disease progression and improve understanding of change in albuminuria and GFR as measures of kidney disease progression in early stages of chronic kidney disease.
So there are two companion papers being published here in the Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology. One is a meta-analysis of observational studies, and the other is a meta-analysis of clinical trials. Why was it important to look at both things?
Yes, because it is important to look at both of them because the two different approaches nicely complement each other. And I will try to explain why. So in preparation for the workshop, the National Kidney Foundation appointed a planning and operation committees and also an analytic group committee to formulate review topics and research questions, to design and conduct analyses using data from the observational studies and from clinical trials. So for the observational analyses, we use data from prospective cohorts participating in the Chronic Kidney Disease Prognosis Consortium to evaluate the strength of the association of a candidate surrogate with clinical endpoints. And we also use data from clinical trials that participated in the Chronic Kidney Disease Epidemiology Collaboration to evaluate the strength of the association of a treatment effect on the candidate surrogate with the treatment effect on the clinical endpoint. As I mentioned, combining both observational and data from clinical trials has several strengths. The strength of the analysis of cohorts is the long duration of follow-up and large sample size, enabling more accurate assessment of associations compared to clinical trials. The limitation of the analysis of cohorts is that it predicts the clinical outcome from the candidate surrogate within individual patients, but not whether a treatment effect on the surrogate can predict a treatment effect on the clinical outcome. It should also be mentioned that accurate prediction of the clinical outcome in a cohort may not translate to accurate prediction of a treatment effect on the clinical outcome if the association that we observe in an observational cohort between the surrogate and clinical outcome results from confounding factors. So the cohort analysis is also challenged by the possibility that commonly used treatments may not be recorded. So there are some strengths in the cohorts, and there are a number of limitations. But these limitations can be overcome by adding data from clinical trials, because the main strength of the analysis of trials is that the intention to treat analysis directly evaluates the accuracy with which treatment effects on the surrogate endpoint predict treatment effects on the clinical endpoint. There are, however, also limitations from clinical trials that are overcome by analyses in cohorts. The limitation from clinical trials is the relatively small sample size compared to cohorts and the limited follow-up. And as I mentioned, in the cohorts, we have a longer follow-up. So the two approaches nicely complement each other.
Well, so tell me a little bit about the analytical approach used in both of those papers you just talked about. What are some of the features that make this work an advance over previous studies?
Yeah, so in the observational database, we assess the strength of the association between change in albuminuria during a 1, 2, and 3 year exposure period with the subsequent risk of end-stage kidney disease. Since variability among individuals and measurement error in albuminuria may lead to attenuation of the association with the clinical outcome due to regression dilution, we applied novel analytical methods to account for this. Of course, the extremely large sample size that we had in the observational cohort is another strength of the analysis. In clinical trials, we examined the association between the treatment effect on albuminuria over a 6 and 12 month period with the treatment effects on the clinical endpoint during the full duration of the trial. The clinical endpoint was a composite of doubling of creatinine, GFR less than 15, or chronic dialysis. So for the clinical trials, we calculated the minimal albuminuria effect size that conferred a high probability that there will also be a significant treatment effect on the clinical endpoint. Such analyses have never been performed for albuminuria, although they have been used in other areas of medicine. And we now apply this for the first time in the area of nephrology and specifically for albuminuria, which is a novel feature and advances previous work.
Well, so did the findings of these two analyses seem to match up then? What did the results show?
Yeah, the two analyses nicely showed nicely similar results. So in the cohorts, we found that change in albuminuria was consistently associated with subsequent risk of end-stage kidney disease. The hazard ratio for end-stage kidney disease after a 30% decrease in albuminuria over a 2-year baseline period was 0.83. And when we adjusted for regression dilution, the hazard ratio was 0.78. So a 30% reduction in albuminuria is associated with a 22% reduction in risk of end-stage kidney disease. And these hazard ratios were consistent across cohorts and subgroups, although they were somewhat higher for stronger for higher baseline albuminuria. Now, when we look at the clinical trials, we found that each 30% reduction in the albuminuria level by the treatment relative to control treatment was associated with an average 27% lower risk for the clinical endpoint. So very close to the 22% lower risk that we found in the observational studies. For future trials, our model predicted that treatment effects that reduced the albuminuria by 30% relative to the control provides a hazard ratio for the clinical endpoint of 0.68. So basically that means that each percent reduction in albuminuria is associated with 1% reduction in the risk of end-stage renal disease, so almost a one-to-one relationship.
Yeah, that's an absolutely fascinating outcome. So what are some of the next steps that we need then to advance the use of this albuminuria change as an outcome in clinical trials of diabetic kidney disease and forms of CKD?
The publications that we are going to publish in the Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology certainly do not mean that we have finished our work. Actually, many questions arose during the conference, in particular to assess in more detail the association between treatment effects on albuminuria and treatment effects on the clinical endpoint in specific subgroups, such as those with diabetes or glomerular nephropathies. And indeed, the current analyses had unfortunately limited power to accurately assess these subgroups. And we are inviting other collaborators, people who have performed clinical trials, to work with us to enlarge the database and perform reliable subgroup analyses. In addition, we also need to ensure that our results are implemented in practice. Although albuminuria is more and more measured in patients in clinical practice, monitoring of albuminuria, in particular after start of renal protective treatment, is infrequently performed. And there are nowadays several drugs, not only renin angiotensin system inhibitors, but also the GLP-1 receptor agonists and the SGLT2 inhibitors that lower albuminuria. And the magnitude of albuminuria reduction is associated with the degree of renal risk reduction in the long